Most business podcasts today focus on the 1%, the nationally known larger-than-life personalities, entrepreneurs, and celebrities with interesting business stories. Business Exit Stories shares the stories of the other 99% of unheralded entrepreneurs that own successful companies in manufacturing, retail, logistics, telecommunications, construction, food service, and in every imaginable type of business in every state and city around the country. These are the stories told by the deal makers that facilitate exits. These are the mergers and acquisition specialists, business brokerages, financial and wealth planners, CPAs, appraisers, and attorneys. By listening to their stories, you'll learn what the entrepreneurs and business owners they represent did right and what they did wrong when it comes to exiting their business through a sale or a merger. In fact, you'll not only learn how they avoided disastrous exits, but how they positioned their companies for an out-of-the-ballpark home run when they exited their business. And here's your host, Marvin L. Storm.
Hi, this is Marvin L. Storm of the Business Exit Stories podcast. Today, we're here with Adam Beebe. Adam is a specialist in the mergers and acquisition space, dealing only with online businesses. Adam, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, thanks, Marvin. My name's Adam Beebe, and I work at Latonis. That's latonis.com. I'm one of six full-time commission-only brokers that marry up sellers of online businesses. And to be clear, we only deal with online businesses. So we represent the seller of online businesses, and we also do, well, we do joint representation, so we can also represent the interests of the buyers of online businesses. So the owner, Rick Latona, that's who the company is named after. And be it e-commerce or software as a service businesses or advertising through content, you know, content businesses that monetize through advertising, really the gambit of pretty much anything you can think of online. With few exceptions, we sell those businesses, those cash flow positive businesses.
So the type of transactions you get involved in being in the online space, could you talk a little bit of several transactions that you've dealt with in the last few years that didn't go as well as you might have thought as when you originally got involved in listing to business?
Sure, absolutely. And the moral to the story on all these businesses and on all deals that get transacted is they virtually never go as smoothly as we hope or could think they could go. There is a set amount of, look, this is normal blips on the radar, snafus that happen within a deal because we have two individuals who are self-interested, which is understandable, and we're trying to get those to intersect. The two I'm going to talk about that had more than that average, both had happy endings. The deals closed. The first one is an e-commerce business that sold and still does sell and is still functioning very well. Exercise equipment, and they did it via its URL, eBay, primarily though through Amazon, and the fulfillment method through Amazon is called FBA. And some people on hearing this may know this, but that's fulfillment by Amazon. And the Reader's Digest version of it is the widgets are shipped from wherever the individual owner of the business gets them manufactured from. And that manufacturer is going to either ship them directly to the seller, who then forwards them to the Amazon warehouses, or that supplier is going to send it directly to Amazon, the warehouse. And the reason being is there's going to be a standing inventory in those massive Amazon warehouses located across the country. And so when someone says, I would like to buy it, you know, the actual product is shipped directly from that Amazon warehouse directly to the buyer of that product.
So this business that you're discussing here is virtually, I guess, a virtual business, could have very few employees, and the primary job of the business is to source products, get them manufactured, and get them over to the warehouse and do the marketing of that business.
That's exactly correct. Just to expound upon the marketing of the business, the real key to an Amazon business is getting what's called a buy box. And the buy box, as you know, as one would think, is that box, which is going to make someone more likely buy. So when you type in, let's just say, fitness equipment of this type, whatever it is, there's going to be dozens of results that come up. The ones that are going to be purchased more often than not are going to be the first ones you see, as long as you're price competitive. And the way to get that buy box is have good seller reviews, good product reviews, and be competitive in price. But right, yes, the main objective of a seller of this type of business is get a quality product produced, get it for an economical price, get it to be shipped over to Amazon. And then the flip side of that is once it's at Amazon, get people to see it through your Amazon seller account and get them to buy it. And this particular one, the majority of the business was through Amazon. The three things that we need, and this is going to be consistent whether a deal happens as seamlessly as we want or not, it's a quality business, it's a quality seller, and it's a quality price. Quality business is exactly what one think it would be. It's been around for a while, it's reasonably stable, it's not on a nosedive, assortment of products being offered, decent margins, fill in some more blanks there.
Talk a little bit more about the quality of the business, especially in the online world here when we're talking about these Amazon businesses, the fulfillment by Amazon, the FBA type of businesses. When you talk about positioning, you know, I buy a lot of stuff on Amazon like most people do today. Is it specifically driven by reviews that you get listed at the top?
That's a big part of it. So there's the seller review, the actual, this seller, their claims were valid. And then there's the product reviews, meaning I got the product and it's as advertised. So the composition of those two sets of reviews, along with, you know, the price, which is competitive, the better that combination is, the higher Amazon's going to rank you in their search results. Now, obviously, Amazon does some of their own and sells some of their own products, so they're going to be right front and center. But for parties that are not Amazon Central or Amazon.com, so that, or you know, Amazon Corporate, the way to ensure that you're going to be able to get that precious buy box is get good product reviews, get good seller reviews, and keep your price competitive.
So in this case, the seller obviously filled that checkbox that you listed.
The seller had all that. The buyer recognized that, and the snafus that happened were not a result of the seller and or buyer actions. What happened in this circumstance is, and it happens with ongoing frequency and ongoing increased frequency, the LOI was done, the letter of intent was done, the contract was done, and the closing was set for 45 days after the signing of the contract. And the reason being is the final price was going to be determined upon the revenue and the profit margin within those 45 days. Soon after the signing of the contract and the starting of the 45-day clock, this seller's Amazon Seller Central account got hijacked. What that means is a third party, nefarious party, stole this person's identity on Amazon and was diverting orders to their store. Now, Amazon's going to catch that, but who's going to catch that first is almost always the actual obvious, the seller themselves. So the seller caught it. There wasn't too much damage done, but the amount of revenue and profit suffered within that 45 days.
So is the 45 days that you mentioned here from closing for this type of business, is that traditionally a normal closing time from the time of the LOI to closing?
It was about average. This is a mid six digit selling price. Profit was a shade under 200, maybe about 175,000 over the trailing 12 months. So given this size business, 30 to 45 days is standard. And thankfully, we had a very engaged seller and buyer in this process. And both agreed to, look, this is what happened. This happens. the buyers were committed in buying it. So instead of basing the revenue and the profit on that 45 days, they delayed it and made it from day 46 after the signing through day 90. So the closing got delayed. And thankfully, the account recovered, the seller account recovered. Amazon put an extra layer of protection on that account, which is a benefit to the buyer. And the selling price, everything stayed the same. But that was one that was, LOI was done, contract was done, time was clicking, and then something through no fault of anybody, there was a robbery, there was a theft. And thankfully, all parties involved worked to get the deal back on track and the deal closing. And that was really the first time that's ever happened to me. It's happened where the account got hijacked, and then both parties agreed to dissolve the deal. I've never had one that worked out the actual deal ended up working out. So that's a success story.
Well, it's kind of amazing that the business can bounce back or sales recover to the same level within, I guess, matter of a few days once they're back online. It's just really amazing. That wouldn't really happen in the bricks and mortar environment necessarily, but the online environment.
If someone came in, I guess, with a gun and stole all the inventory and robbed it, right, it would be harder to, I think, recover and do that in a brick and mortar. But thankfully, it was definitely a little bit easier here in the online world, so to speak.
So you're saying that in this particular situation, the buyer and seller were both motivated to get to the closing. The seller was looking to exit the business and had a high degree of motivation and was very engaged, as well was the buyer. And they were willing to work through these challenges to get to closing.
Absolutely.
And you say that you've had other situations where that didn't happen.
Absolutely. Where, the same circumstances manifested and, normally the buyer says, this isn't a good sign. I'm going to bow out.
Well, can you share another story that had some real challenges in the exit process?
Sure. This one is also happened this year, is a software business. In essence, what it does and still what it did and still does is allows the posting on multiple social media platforms through their software. So as opposed to having to go to each individual outlet, one can just use this software, post once, and it gets propagated to all these different sources and outlets. So quality business, been around for about a decade, very engaged seller in the process.
Tell us a little bit more about the seller, who they were, and if you know any of the background of how they got into the business.
An IT professional and a marketing professional, and this was one of a few businesses that he owns. I actually sold this business to him 4 or 5 years ago, and he raised it up considerably, put some more functionality to it, and used his IT acumen to just raise the value of the business. So he had a lot of sweat equity involved and did a lot of marketing with it and decided, which happens more often than not, the reason why a lot of these people are selling is that they have more than one project going on. And it's opportunity costs. There's a law of diminishing return. What they're doing is they don't have enough time to devote to all their projects. So as opposed to just running among spinning plates, they've decided to sell one of the plates, use that capital to invest it in some of their other businesses. And that was the case in this and also the preceding example. The deal went relatively smoothly up until the actual contract time. This is after the signing of the term sheet. The term sheet is a non-legally binding document and is more readily gotten to. It's more of a worksheet. Where this particular one, I wouldn't say unrailed, but it was an above average amount of time in working out the contract. because we had one professional logical seller and one professional logical buyer set adamant about certain things being included or not included in the contract. And both parties had their feet dug in for a while.
Did the buyer in this case, had they bought other businesses before? So they brought some of their experience to the table that they wanted included in the contract?
Yes, they had bought businesses before, and they also were involved in the software arena as well. So we had two educated parties, educated in the sense that they bought, sold businesses before. They kind of know, you know, how things go and that you have to have some flexibility and what is quote unquote standard practice. And they also had a software background. So they kind of knew what, you know, and that's partially the reason why the deal worked out. Because at the end of the day, individually us, you know, it was my seller and another one of these Latona's brokers here, one of their buyers. And the reason why the deal worked out is I was able to speak individually with my seller, and the Latona's buyer broker spoke individually with their buyer. Kind of gave them a dose of reality. And the dose of reality I had to give to my seller was, this is the best offer and this is the best buyer that you're going to get. You know, concurrently with the contract being worked on, you know, there were other inquiries, other buying parties. And as mentioned, this buyer was someone who's in the industry, had bought businesses before. We put on our site under contract.
So as these other buyers show up, they are being fed through your network. And my understanding is here is that both sides, the buyer and seller, were both represented by your firm?
That's correct. They both weren't represented by me as an individual broker. But yes, both parties, both buyer and seller, were represented as a Latona's client.
As you have this portfolio of prior business contacts that you've worked with, and they search your website or find out that the business under contract is being negotiated and they show up, talk a little bit about how you manage that process to keep those people engaged in case something didn't happen with the original transaction to culminate in a closing.
I mean, really what it comes down to is just giving them weekly updates. Just say, listen, I mean, I know we spoke about this deal being under exclusive LOI. This is the projected closing date. Just want to let you know that I haven't forgotten about you. The deal's still on track, but again, it could derail. So it's just, the answer to your question is weekly follow up with whatever update you have, even though it is an update, but it's nothing concrete, meaning, hey, the deal's still happening. It may or may not close on this date, but here's my weekly update, and I'll let you know of next week what's going on then.
And I'm sure you've had transactions that have fallen apart that you've been able to bring in a backup offer.
Yeah, probably about a third. Once a deal hits LOI, you know, the better the LOI, the more likely the deal is going to close, you know, because the better the LOI equates to the buyer doing due diligence already, and we almost always require proof of funds. You know, we try to, you know, we just don't want to put a business under an exclusive LOI, take the business off the market and pass up on, you know, who could eventually be buying the business. But having said all that, with all the best intentions for everybody involved. So yeah, I mean, the name of the game is just having a good follow-up with people who have previously and concurrently inquired about the business while it's under LOI.
So in this particular transaction, it sounds like both the buyer and the seller each had their specific inclusion in the contract, and they both had kind of planted their feet at one point in time and were pretty insistent that this is the way they wanted the transaction to go.
Absolutely. And then it just, instead of it closing, you know, within the average 30 to 45 days, it took close to 90 days, but it worked out. It closed.
Oh, cool. Well, I guess those type of situations can be challenging, but everyone got what they needed out of the transaction. And I assume the business was closed and the new buyers took it up to the next level.
Both assumptions are correct.
Cool. Well, transactions that kind of went better than average in your portfolio, can you give us a couple of examples of situations that worked out kind of smoothly?
Sure. Yeah, all four examples I'm giving you are from 2019. And because I can give you four examples from 2018, you know, for the past 12 years, which is how long I've been, you know, how long this business has been going on. But a business that went well, meaning below average amount of derailments, was a business that offered an online calculator. So it was a smaller business, relatively speaking, but what it did was, if you go to Google and type in online calculator, it's one of the ones on the first page, and the way the person made money is advertising and affiliate networks. But it made a good amount of money, probably, you know, close to $75,000 a year in profit. It was definitely on autopilot.
How long had the business been around?
That one's, from memory, 7 to 8 years. And I was representing a seller. Another Latonis broker here was representing the buyer. Both buyer and seller were, after the first call that we did with both of us Latonis brokers and the seller and the buyer, all four of us were on a call. The judgment was made is everybody's getting along so well. Let's we have all our buyers under NDA, non-circumventing NDA. So we started a group thread with all parties involved. And the buyer and the seller took it from there.
Why don't you just, before we get too far down here, talk a little bit about the terminology NDA and what that means and how it works.
Non-disclosure agreement. And essentially what that means is, you know, you can prove capability, but you can't prove intent. But essentially what the NDA says in nice legal jargon is your intention of downloading this prospectus is for purchase of a business, and you agree not to use any of the information you're about to learn in the prospectus and any subsequent interactions, so as to build a competing business, as well as you're not allowed to divulge any of the information you learn to anyone else who hasn't signed an NDA. And then within that also is non-circumventing. Meaning, you know, you can't contact the seller directly with an intent to cut us out of the deal.
This calculator business, you said, was kind of working on autopilot. So what we have here is a owner of the business that has generating $75,000 a year in profit. It's on autopilot. He doesn't have to do a whole lot to make that $75,000 a year. He's listed somewhere in the top two or three, five listings on Google when someone is looking for an online calculator, and the business just kind of prints money is what it sounds like. What would be the motivation for selling?
As mentioned previously, even though it was on autopilot, you know, maybe the impetus for this seller was, hey, I need money to really put it into a new project. And whereas the time savings isn't as big of a deal, I need that money. So that was this guy's interest in selling. He wanted to get the money for a different project.
What was the profile of the buyers? Were they a larger company that had multiple products and online businesses too?
No, but they had the 2 to 4 sites that garnered traffic, visitors to their sites the same way. And those same 2 to 4 businesses that they currently owned monetized the traffic in the same way. So it was not a person who wasn't in the business at all. It wasn't a conglomerate, if you will. It was two guys, their partners, and they said, listen, we're doing similar things with not with online calculator sites, but with that has the same methodology. Let's use our expertise and let's try to get more traffic to this calculator site so as to make more revenue. That's the buyer who bought it.
Sounds like a pretty good fit where they can leverage what they're doing.
Absolutely.
And that went very smoothly, you're telling me.
Closed in about 10 days, maybe a week.
Oh.
So way below average. Yeah. So that was one where the buyer and the seller hit it off very well, worked everything out, even though, you know, different time zones. One, you know, the buying party lived in Ireland. I think the selling party lived in the Netherlands, if I'm not mistaken. But right. They, you know, I'm here in Eastern U.S. and then the buyer broker is in Hawaii. So we had 4 different time zones to compete with, and in putting them in a group thread, they were able to work it out between themselves very quickly.
So conversely to a lot of the M&A specialists we deal with and business brokers and attorneys that we deal with, they are sitting across the table looking at the buyer and the seller looking at each other. And you're telling me you have people all over the world that never actually meet, and a lot of this is transacted over phone and emails or text, and the business gets done.
The majority of our business is that way. We did close a $22 million software business at the beginning of the year, and there were multitude of face-to-face meetings. It really has to do with the size of the business. Once, and we're currently representing an $18 million, a $12 million, a $15, $16 million. So once you get into that level, then there's going to have to be the handshake. They're going to want to meet. But for the average ticket price that we deal with, which is right around $1 million. Normally, maybe a audio visual call suffices. I mean, it's just, bigger businesses require in-person contact.
Well, how about one more transaction that you felt went really well and worked out maybe even better than planned?
Yeah, so very similar attributes to the one I just discussed. In this particular one, sold e-commerce business and sold nutraceutical products online, Amazon URLs that they own, eBay, a few other sources. It was my buyer this time, and he had no knowledge of online businesses. He was successful doing, other types of businesses, but he was aware of that. And what he did was enlist and paid for a online business expert who could help him with the due diligence, so as to include, the veracity of the traffic, proving revenue, being able to help him come up with, a business model that would help raise the business to the next level.
So is that a little unusual in your world to have someone come, with totally no experience in online, and try to tackle something that is so technical and sounds like you had a lot of business and experience in other types of businesses, probably bricks and mortar, physical products, but none in the online business? Isn't that a little bit unusual?
For the smaller ones, not as unusual. The higher, the more expensive the business, the more unusual it becomes.
Yeah. What was unusual in this particular situation was that he realized that and was willing to write a check to pay for some expertise.
Right. Which is smart, which, we get asked on occasion to be provided with some referrals, which we can definitely do. But it's not always taken up. In fact, the majority of the time it's not, which this guy just had enough foresight to see, look, I know I don't know this, and I'm going to pay someone to help me. And that person, that expert, was convinced that this was a business he should go for. He was also accepting of the seller's lawyer to be the escrow agent, which is uncommon. Usually if a lawyer is involved, it's either going to be the buyer's lawyer as the escrow agent, or a true third party, escrow agent, a lawyer, or a third party escrow company. But we just had a buyer who was very willing to allow some, I wouldn't say excessive, but above average seller requirements, because normally the buyer is the one driving the bus because they're the one with the checkbook. But this particular buyer was convinced by his third base coach, the expert, this is a business you should go for. It's priced right. So he was able to, say, okay, I'm okay with that. Probably given that he was happy with aspects of the business.
In this case, where the buyer actually went out and hired an expert and wrote the checks to pay for that expert in advance, you indicated that not everyone does that. Is it fair to say then that those that don't do that end up writing the checks anyway by making mistakes?
More often than not. Yeah, that's definitely fair to say.
Well, Adam, I really appreciate you taking the time here. This has been an interesting conversation, an interview. I think that the online world out there, we all go to Amazon, we all buy things from online sources, and to know that there is a whole nother ecosystem out there for businesses that do exist in the virtual world, and folks like yourself specialize in that area. If anyone in our audience wants to reach out and contact you, how would they do that?
So the best way is Adam, A-D-A-M, at latonas.com. Again, it's Adam Beebe, been doing it for 12 years. Happy to deal with people just getting started. Have dealt with people in the millions upon millions of dollars in individual deals. So whoever you are, I'd be happy to meet you.
All right, Adam, thanks for joining us today. This is Marvin L. Storm, host of the Business Exit Stories podcast. We'll see you on our next episode.
Join us on our next episode when our guests will share more stories of how entrepreneurs, founders, and business owners have exited their businesses and learn about what to avoid and what you need to do to successfully position your business for a successful exit. If you enjoyed this podcast, take a minute to give us a rating on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts so aspiring entrepreneurs everywhere can find us. If you wish to reach out to any of our guests, please visit our website at www.businessexitstories.com, where you can find more information. Join us next time for more Business Exit Stories.